Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth, straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden, and I'm working
at... An Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents, for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Hello, everybody. Chuck Bonnerwell, Julie Hayden here, the True Straight Up on a beautiful day.
That's right. The show brought to you, as always, by happytrees.co, a great full-service tree company, Denver Cynogenics, and Dr. Julie McCallan. We're going to have a lot of going on today. First week, good news today. As I told you, Friday, Chuck was off at a golf tournament. Very good weekend for the Bonnerwell boys. Chuck came in second in his golf tournament.
Runner up.
And he was almost the winner, except for the other people cheated. No, they didn't. I guess I shouldn't say that in golf. But he did. He played great. And then on Sunday, yesterday, Rev was also in a golf tournament. Great job by the U.S. Kids Golf Association. And he came in his age category fourth. There are a couple of really good golfers in there, too. So it was a great day.
The bad part about it was, when I played, it was just like Irish winter, rain, yeah. Windy, cold. And then when Rev played, the sun came out.
It was sunny. My role was to be the gopher, the push cart, the cheerleader, et cetera, et cetera. So it was a wonderful weekend. I am not a particularly good golfer, but I'm an enthusiastic supporter. And I thoroughly enjoy, as Rev and I call it, cocktails at the turn when we turn for the 18th. Hey, so we're going to have in a second here, when you get him on the line, John Lott Jr. We've had him on the show before. He's an author, commentator, and he had an article in the Federalist not that long ago, a couple of days ago, actually, talking about election integrity and sloppy record keeping. And we got John on the line. We'll get to him in 1 second. And at 3:30, we're going to have Dr. Roy Johnston on. He's a former university professor. If you've been reading Colorado news lately, it's like we're all going to die any day now from climate change. We have no water in the Colorado River. And he gets to the truth about that. That too. But first, let's go to John, Dr. John Lott Jr., author, commentator, author of Gun Control Myths, the founder of the Crime Prevention Research Center. Hey, John, thank you and welcome back to the show.
Yeah, welcome back, John.
Thank you for having me on again. It's great to talk to you guys.
So, all right. So I read with great interest, and actually it's been in the Federalist, the Washington Examiner kind of picked it up. You have been involved in a study that basically revealed incredibly, and I think sloppy is probably a kind word for it, because I'm not so sure it's accidental, but record keeping by secretaries of state and the implications they might. The implications that might have an election integrity going forward. So why don't you explain what you guys did and what you found?
Right. Well, I mean, it was a pretty simple idea. What we wanted to do was to look across the country, different precincts, to see whether the number of ballots cast, how that compared to the number of people who were listed as voting. As I say, you'd think that that would be an interesting task. We looked at 14 swing states. We looked at the 100 most populous counties in those states. And what we found was that 94 of those 100 counties did not keep records of who actually voted in past elections. And even the six that did keep records, there were big gaps between the number of ballots counted and the number of people who they list as voting.
And so, and that's clarified too. So we're not talking about eligible voters, because that can mean a lot of different things. We're talking about their own records, they being these counties, that they're supposed to keep in terms of the number of people that voted compared to the number of ballots that basically they say were counted, right? That's what you did?
Right.
Okay. Well, you'd think that would be a fairly straightforward, you know, audit kind of thing. And another question, too, in these states, there are laws requiring them to keep this information, isn't there? Or aren't there?
Well, there's a federal law, federal 1960 Federal Civil Rights Act, that requires that they have to keep all records for, you know, relevant to federal elections for 22 months after the election, which is one reason why we focused on the 2020 election, because
right.
when we were asking for those records, and we've been asking for well over a year now, both the Crime Prevention Research Center and American First Policy Institute. And, you know, it took a long time. First of all, they didn't tell you that they didn't have the records. They would give you lists of voters, but it was only by accident that we discovered that they weren't lists of voters from the election. What happens is that they save over files. They have a file from, you know, immediately after the election, they start updating the data that they have. It could be a day or two or 3 days afterwards, whatever. And, you know, let's say you have an Excel file. You have a list of voters there. You save over the file so you can't recover exactly what the list was from the day that you want it. And amazingly enough, these counties across the country don't have archives. You know, if you have an Apple computer, I have an Apple computer, and you have
right.
something called, you know, I'm just drawing a blank, but it's, you know, Time Machine on it.
Right.
And you can go and essentially it archives it every, you know, every hour on the hour. And
right.
it will go and you can go back to November 3rd, 2020 and pull down the file that you had from that day exactly as it was.
Right.
So you would think that shouldn't be that difficult to go and accomplish, but they don't have the file. They save over the file from the day that they had it to begin with, and they don't have an archive.
And that's amazing. I mean, in Colorado, you know, there's certainly you can get a list and see every election I voted in and every primary I voted in, and so all these counties and all these states. None of them have those kind of records?
No, they're not the actual list of people who vote.
Right.
What happens is they'll have, if people move or they die, then they'll go and correct the file there. And Colorado was one of the states that we reached out to that wasn't able to provide us any of the lists of people who actually voted in that election. We
right.
reached out to El Paso County, Adams, Jefferson, Arapahoe, and Denver. And
well, how about the Secretary of State? What about the Secretary of State?
The Secretary of State gets their data from the counties.
Yeah. So,
but I know there are lists.
We also reached out to Secretary of State and all the states that we looked at too. And
but
none of them,
whether
it be the county.
Yeah, and to just clarify with what Chuck's saying, I think there's a difference when you can go into the Secretary of State's office and see what you voted at. But you're saying you wanted to see the record from the counties on whose ballot.
Or the Secretary of State.
Or anyone. But you didn't want to see something
that
was.
We want to know who actually voted. And the thing
right.
is, look, they're cleaning up what they call
right.
cleaning up the records. Okay?
Right.
And so. You may have, you know, if the records are changing constantly all the time and they're not,
right.
you know, they're not keeping the original records. So you can.
You wanted a snapshot on election day, right? Of the election.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right.
And
exactly.
Now, do you think that they couldn't give it to you because they didn't have it, or did they not want to give it to you? Or, I mean, because we've seen in this, the whole Tina Peters thing, and I know you've been involved in some of the issues in Colorado. It seems to me that our Secretary of State's attitude is simply, hey, this is my secret personal information, and I don't get to show it or share it with anybody unless they're a George Soros related organization.
Right. Well, all I can tell you is we get lists. We thought we had the original list.
Yeah.
And then it was only by accident that we discovered that they weren't, they didn't have the updated stuff. I mean, you go through the story. It was basically talking to people in Ohio that we did it. And then we went back and we said, okay, We asked for the list of people who voted on November 3rd. You gave us a list. Is this the actual list?
Right.
And they would say no. Because what happened was we were finding huge gaps. I mean, it's not right. just these six counties where the average difference is about 2.9% between people who are listed as voting and the ballots that are recorded as being voted. But we were finding that we were finding even bigger gaps in many places in the country. And we were saying, wow, you know, this is amazing. But then we found out we couldn't make that conclusion. In Colorado, we were finding big gaps there, too. But then we found out you can't really do that because it's not the list. So if they removed people who have died or moved from the voting list, you're going to have more ballots counted than you're going to have people listed as voting. And so, you know, that makes it look like there's a problem when maybe there wasn't, because if they had been able to give you the list from that date, then you wouldn't see that gap.
Well, let's talk about the gaps, and then I want to circle back around to why this, because you'd think this would be sort of basic audit 101. But talk about the gaps, because I know you were talking about in some situations. I mean, it was enough. The gap was like more than double the difference that might have been made in it, but a person lost by. I mean, talk about the gaps and the significance there.
Okay, again, we only have data claimed for six counties.
Yeah.
One of the counties we got it was for Cobb County in Georgia. It's the only county that provided us that data in Georgia. And they had a gap of about 34,000 votes. Okay.
Wow.
And virtually all of that was precincts that had more ballots listed as having been voted than they had people listed as voting. There was one precinct where the reverse was true, but all the other precincts had more ballots counted than people listed as voting. Well, 34,000, that's like three times larger than the win margin that Biden had in the whole state. And that's just from one county in the state. I have no idea what the problems exist in the other counties, the other 87 counties or whatever in Georgia. And then you take Florida, for example. Only two counties in Florida had the data, Miami-Dade and Orange County. You know, the second largest county in the state, Broward, didn't have the data. They told us originally that they did, and we kept pushing. They said, well, give it to us, and they never gave it to us. And finally, they admitted that they didn't have it. And but for those two counties in Florida, you have a gap of about 42,000 votes. Now, the vast majority of that, almost all that, are precincts where you have more ballots counted than people listed as voting. But there are a number of precincts where the reverse is true, too. And, you know, so you're left with a couple possibilities. It's possible, you know, so, you know, if you have, there are accusations after the 2020 election that ballots were being run through the machines multiple times. So you would count the same ballot more than once. And that would be a situation where you'd get more ballots counted than people listed as voting. There's also accusations that ballots were being destroyed. And that's a situation where you might get more people listed as voting than ballots being counted. The third possibility, and this is the most benign, but it's still troublesome, and that is none of the counties, even the six that claimed to have a list of who actually voted, didn't have a list of who actually voted. And so but it's a little bit hard to figure that one out, because if you're just removing names for people who voted, you know, who died or moved afterwards, you would see just situations where you're going to have more ballots counted than people listed as voting. And the fact that we see both occur makes it a little hard to figure that one out as an explanation for what's going on.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I mean, the point is that it wouldn't have made a difference in the Florida election, the presidential race, but there are a number of other races in the state recent Senate and gubernatorial races there,
right,
where
it would
42,000, even from just those two counties, could have made a difference in the election. We're not saying we know how the people voted. You know, in Cobb County, that's a heavily Democratic county, and so, you know, it's possible that it picked up a fair number of votes for Biden. But, you know, you don't know for sure how those ballots, if they were counted more than once, would have voted.
You know, and it seems to me, to put this like in the private sector, that you would think if I was manufacturing widgets and I, you know, it was important to keep track of how many widgets one set of documents say I'm producing, and then how many set of widgets another, I mean, I actually produced, right? You would have to do that. And if you were to come to me and say, you know, geez, Julie, we show that you have a discrepancy of 34,000, 42,000 there, you would think the person would say, well, geez, we better get to the bottom of that and figure out what's going on here. But that was not the reception you got from the counties or the secretaries of state, right? They didn't say, gee, John Locke, thank you for bringing this our attention. We need to get to work on this, right?
Well, it varies, the response that we've gotten. We've gotten a few states. We've gotten Ohio and West Virginia were sufficiently concerned about this that they immediately went out and started archiving the past records that they have. And the Secretary of State in Ohio has spearheaded a move to go and get other secretaries of state to sign on. And my understanding is he may have 12 states, including his, that have signed a letter where they're making that point. It's great that you would have 12 states or whatever that have signed it. I believe they're all Republican.
There's a shot. Yeah, I was going to ask you that. Okay. Well, and it seems to me, you know.
Well, go over those reasons again why you'd have many more ballots than you had voters
people
voting. And I imagine there are some cases where people, sent in a ballot and then sent in a second one, but they only counted one. Or as you indicated, endless.
No. We're talking about ballots counted.
Counted.
Yeah.
And so there are a lot more ballots counted than people voting. Is
well,
the whole
more
thing.
I mean, it's for the counties that we have the data for, the total, I mean, the vast majority of places you have more ballots counted than people listed as voting. But you also, in all these counties that we have the data for, also have instances where you have precincts where you have more people listed as voting than you have ballots counted. Usually, though, overwhelmingly, you would see more ballots counted than people listed as voting.
Well, and either way, what it does show, like you said, taking all of the you know, the left insanity about this whole issue aside, what it does show is that there are some questions there about how the system is working or not working. And it would seem to me that it's a pretty straightforward thing to resolve. Like you said, it's just a matter of keeping the archive, keeping the record, and then you can compare it, right? And then you can go back and figure out, okay, well, I mean, you know, here in Colorado, Tina Peters was pushing, which seems perfectly reasonable to me, in a couple of counties, for an actual hand count, right? I mean, that seems really reasonable. So go, here's what the machine said the person voted, and here's what their ballot said, and then compare. And that they won't do that, right? They threw that out. And I know you maybe don't want to say this, but I'll say it. A lot of these Democratic secretaries of states and counties, and then some Rhino Republicans too, really don't want to get to the bottom of, is the system working? Can we prove that it's working? Can we audit it and demonstrate to people that it's working? Or are there things we need to fix? They just want to ignore it and say anybody who says any kind of thing is an election denier and, you know, needs to be arrested.
Yeah, well, there's not a discussion about this. I mean, I've done other work with the Crime Prevention Research Center that looks at voting rules in other countries, and the United States is very unique in terms of not having safeguards for voting. You know, you look at Europe, for example, basically all 47 countries in Europe, except for some parts of the United Kingdom, require that you have to have voter IDs, government-issued photo voter IDs, in order to vote. You look at absentee ballots. I mean, now you have Colorado and other states have mail-in ballots. Absentee ballots, which are not as bad, 35 of the 47 countries in Europe ban absentee ballots for people living in the country there. 10 others allow it, but they will not send you the absentee ballots in the mail. They require that you actually show up in person and present a government-issued photo ID before they will give you the ballot in person there, because they won't send it in the mail because they want to be certain that the person who's voting, the person who gets the ballot, is the person who's supposed to be doing the voting.
Right.
People can go through. If people go to our website at crimeresearch.org, they can go and download the report. The report's like 743 pages, and the vast majority of it is essentially photocopies of the correspondence that we've had with the different state secretaries of state and with the different election offices and counties across the country, where they keep on, they'll initially in many cases say, well, here's the data, and we'll press them on it and say, is this from this date? Because we looked at these to begin with, and we found huge discrepancies. And
right.
So, and then they'll come back and say, well, it's not really the data from that date. We've kind of updated it and stuff. So it won't match the count for the number of ballots. And we'll ask them things like, well, do you have it on an archive? And they say, no, we don't keep an archive of this stuff. And it's really astounding just reading through the literally, 700 pages of documents that we've gotten from these different election offices across the country, that they say they don't have it, or after answering questions for a little while, they just stop responding, and won't give us any more information. And we've been working on this for a year and a half, getting this data together.
Wow.
Yeah, that's amazing stuff. Yeah. I mean, in some counties, they went so far as that the local secretary of state, other people would say, no, don't even compare signatures to see whether it's the person or not.
But you're just trying to get, you would think they would, I mean, again, this just seems sort of basic audit 101, right? You want to see, does the number of people that we
show. This is like the simplest thing you can ask for, okay?
Right.
We just want to know whether the number of people who are listed as voting, equals the ballot count that's there.
Right.
I mean, what else? If you can't even tell me, if you can't even give me a list, and I've talked to state legislators around the country, they just assume that their election bureaus can give you a list of who actually voted.
Right.
And part of this may be benign in the sense that they're just constantly updating these files because they want to get rid of dead people or people who moved. That's fine. But we're living in an age where it's like costless. I assume everybody who's listening to this has used a computer, and they know that what you do is you just rename the file, okay?
Right.
Rather than saving over the original file that you have there. And it's not like we're talking about huge amounts of disk space or memory that has to be used to keep these files for each of these counties. You have an Excel file with, 10,000 names for a county or whatever it is. Maybe it's going to be, a half a megabyte or something like that at most, or even for the biggest counties.
Yeah, you could just stick it on a hard drive and put it on the shelf and say, you know, data from the election day. Well, listen, John, we have to let you go. Thank you for doing this. And this, I think, is not getting near the attention it deserves.
Well,
because
not election integrity, because I always scream election denier.
But thank you for doing this. And please, you know, I mean, you're doing a great job getting the word out about what you do find out. And I encourage people to go. It's crimeresearch.org. That's where people can go to get more information.
Yeah, it's at crimeresearch.org. It's at the very top of the page that they can get a copy of the report that we have and look at the work there. And they can, as I say, we've kept a record of all the correspondence that we've had with the different state election bureaus. And so they can go and look through and just see the conversations.
Well, I'd like to see the one
to get this.
I'd like to see the one on Colorado, because it's incredible to me that they don't have a list. They certainly can go through and find out how you voted in every election, not how you voted, but whether you voted in every election going back to 1940. So it's amazing.
But they don't have it for everybody. They don't have it. They don't. They've updated the list. So you know, anyway. But good luck.
No, exactly.
If you can get us a list that they actually say is from an election, okay, the people who actually voted, I'd love to see it.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll see. All right, John. Hey, thank you,
John,
for your time.
Appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. John Lott Jr. there. Go to crimeresearch.org. Yeah, that's what I mean, because initially I thought that too. It's like, well, they keep that. And I think what he does is, and everybody's saying, good guess. Thank you, Leo. This raises the question, well, where are they getting that information from, right? It's like, I mean, and you know, Mike O'Donnell still put who was a Secretary of State candidate, put stuff out. I mean, he's shown all kinds of things where like one house in Fort Lupton will have 144 ballots mailed to it. It's like, what's up with that? And we know what that is. It ERIC system that they use? This is a Soros-based thing. They don't purge anybody ever, right?
There's one state who's now trying to get out of ERIC.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But you would think, though, again, this is the most basic thing. Why on earth can't they just take the files from that day? And as he said, just create a file, like number of people who voted on election day, number of ballots cast. And I mean, you know, I could see if it was a few hundred or something like that, but from one county, 34,000. I mean, that's not that many people who died in between time, you know?
Well, you do know how many people voted, because that's the totals you get. You don't know who they are.
Well, no, that's what he's saying, though, but not really, Chuck. That's what raises a question. If you can't come back after the fact and tell me, compare the list to me of the people that the machine shows voted, right, and then the ballots cast and there's a discrepancy, I mean, that's a point.
Okay, but you have voting totals.
Right, but what if the voting total?
That tells you how many people's votes were counted.
Well, no, that tells you. Yes, but when there's a difference between how many people's votes were counted, the vote total, and the number of ballots cast, if there's a 34,000, which was the right number?
Yeah.
Do you see what I'm saying? I mean, that's the most basic question. And again, it just drives me crazy. All of these people, election denier, there's no evidence. It's like, well, what do you call? Maybe that's not evidence of fraud or anything like that, but it's a big gap,
you can turn on your TV and see Wayne Williams and
Jenna Griswold
telling you we're all set.
Yep, exactly. And I know you guys have had some great comments here. You know, this is Stephen, who's doing the certification for the voting machines for this year's midterms.
Dominion,
I think, right? And this is from Jacob. This is absolutely true. When the voter fraud starts hurting the Dems, you'll see the complaints run wild. Well, remember, a few years ago, it was the Dems who were complaining about voting machines, right? They were the ones who were saying, wait, those voting machines are bad.
Just think about the South. You know, after 1876, the Democratic white voters excluded Black voters, who were overwhelmingly Republican.
Right.
Only did it get changed when all of a sudden Black voters became Democrats. And then the Democrats went, great, we'll just make sure they can vote. But Republicans never successfully.
Well, and there's another thing too I want to look at. And this is, I know some of the folks at the Federalist and other places have been doing a job trying to get information. The Biden administration is doing a very sneaky thing in that to enhance diversity and voter participation, the federal government, every federal agency is supposed to be involved in
registering people,
basically a get out the vote effort. Well, gee, you know,
in big cities.
So what could go wrong with that, right?
Well, what could go right if you're a Democrat? Yeah. That's perfect. The Republicans never think of those things.
Right. From Steve, I think by law, an independent company is supposed to certify the voting machines.
But it's true, but they haven't had a federally certified one, and it's amazing.
I think that's one of, yeah, I believe, and I could be wrong on this, that's one of the problems that Tina Peters, one of the things she was suing under, is she said the state is, I think Jenna Griswold is essentially waving her magic wand and saying, certified, hello, and that's about it. And I think Tina Peters, that's one of the things she's been saying, is that, hey, you can't do it that way. And they're like, sure we can, and now we're going to arrest you, Tina Peters, and raid your house. John, what are you doing? Hey, I think we might have Roy. I think I saw Roy Johnson join the Zoom meeting. Roy, are you there? If you're there, go ahead and turn your camera on and unmute yourself. If you've got Roy, I thought I saw him come in. This is from, while we're getting there. Hey, Roy, if you're there, go ahead and come on in. Meanwhile, I can read. This is from Charlene. It's all about getting their people into key positions to do what needs to be done. Exactly. And as Leo said, what does certified mean? There you go. Yeah, we can hear you. Hey.
This technology's about got me dumbfounded here.
Get your picture up?
Can you turn your camera on, or are you not camera ready?
No, I'm camera ready. It's just, again, how do I do this?
Usually at the bottom of the Zoom screen on the
bottom of the Zoom screen.
If you're looking at it on the left-hand side, there's a little there you go.
Magic.
Hey, and you look great too. Dr. Roy Johnston has a great, and I recommend this to everybody too. I had a great column in Colorado Politics. Roy, I saw again, the Colorado Sun is saying we're all going to die because there's not enough water in the Colorado River. For some reason,
climate change.
They've been jumping up and down about climate change, and we're in a drought. And one of the things, and I just want to say this before we let you, that always drove me crazy as a reporter, is they were always saying Colorado's in a drought. And one time I asked one of the persons we were interviewing, I'm like, right, but technically, I mean, aren't we semi-arid? He goes, well, yeah. And I'm like, so is this drought that we're in any worse than the drought we've ever been in? And he's like, well, no. So it's like, well, of course it's a drought. It's like saying the Sahara Desert's in a drought. Well, yes, it's a Sahara Desert, but is it worse? And so it's not climate, is it worse? So you had this great column, though, saying, essentially rebutting all the information that the climate alarmists would have us jump up and down about. And why don't you...
How did you get Colorado Politics to print that? That's amazing.
Well, I have a friend that works for the organization that publishes that and some other newspapers. And so
you're an influencer. Influencing the influencers. Okay, so talk about your column then. What did you point out there? And I don't think we have your graphs. We weren't able to get those up.
That's okay. I don't know if this works.
Oh, yeah, that works.
So I, you know, if we need it, I...
Okay, you can do that.
I got my Crayolas out to give you the color. But anyway, now I've been reading... I mean, we know each other, and things that are vital to our lives here in Colorado, and, you know, are very interesting to me. And the Colorado River, without it, you know, very few people would be here. The population growth we've seen certainly would not have taken place if they hadn't built, you know, what, 5 dams or something in the Colorado River, therefore providing electricity generation. Secure water supplies, eliminating flooding, and so on and so forth. That's why the dams were built. But that pact was built, was agreed to in 1922.
A while ago.
That's 100 years ago. And so reading these articles, I mean, even in the Gazette, you know, which I think leans, you know, more towards the truth, at least on the opinion editorial side, and maybe the news side to a degree.
It's a Phil Anschutz paper. Phil has gone. He gave the maximum amount he could give in his own name to Liz Cheney. So he's a Liz Cheney Republican. If you just look at the articles, and in the Gazette and And all the publishers, not the publishers, all the editors are former Denver Post people. The reporters are former.
Sorry to burst your bubble.
No. Well, I don't want to divulge my sources, right? But I was hoping actually to get it published in the Gazette, but it ended up Colorado Politics. And so I thank my friend for making that happen. Because they put out a six-part series, as have so many.
Everybody's doing it today. I don't know
what the Post has done. I don't even consider the Post anymore. But quite lengthy series on Colorado River, the crisis associated with it. And I've read every one of them. And I sent this friend of mine a note. And I said, you know, I would like to write something that sort of puts some truth into this thing and supported by facts.
No.
Yeah. And because, you know, all of these lies are driving me crazy. So it's not really the situation with the Colorado River is not complicated.
Yeah.
There's only so much water. There's only so much oil. Think of any natural resource. There's a finite amount of it. And so I'm all for conservation. I'm all for recycling. I'm all for environmentalism, as long as it's based on the facts and not political agendas. But what we've seen happen, I think since in the last 30 years, in the 90s and the late 80s, scientists, and I think most scientists probably just want to do their science, right? I don't think they want to mislead people, but they do the science and they get paid by the state, by the federal government, right? So you got to always consider the money flows. Because people are going to do what they get rewarded to do.
Sure. We saw that happen with a guy at CSU who I think is locked up in a federal prison somewhere for questioning some of the climate change thing. And he lost. I mean, he quit coming on the show because he said, I can't do this anymore. I'm going to lose my job. Well, right. And bottom line, so you looked at it. And so when you read these articles, as you said, this River Pack is 100 years old. I remember when I first came to Colorado, everybody was doing water stories. And I came from Illinois. I'm like, what's this big deal with water out here? Mm-hmm. Well, then you realize. But they would have you believe that because of climate change, if you read the articles, you think that that there's no more rainfall ever. And what did you find is the reason for there being less water available to the cities the fact that there's less rainfall, or just that there's
snowpack,
or is it just that there's more cities and more use?
The latter.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's a, you know, anybody that wants this, they can go through you. And you guys can email them the PowerPoint I put together.
Right.
You know, it's fine. I don't even care if I get any credit. I just want.
We'll put it under Julie's name.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the University of Colorado, Colorado State University, other quote experts put together an assessment. That's what the first page is. They published it in 2020. It's really pretty good.
Okay.
So some of the things it says is that the upper basin, which is essentially from southwest Wyoming, of course, into the western slopes of the Rockies, and then down to Lake Powell. That's the upper basin. That's where 97% of the water that flows through the Colorado comes from. Now, that includes the Green River, and it includes the San Juan River. It includes the Yampa River and all the tributaries. Obviously, it includes.
Right.
But 92% of the stream flow is coming from Colorado and mostly, and then the Teton area in Wyoming. So that's where most of the water is coming from, and it's coming from snowmelt. We get so much snow. So the question is, we hear people like Brad Udall, this politician who wears scientist clothing, Colorado State University, with all of these scaremongering quotes talking about climate change and, you know, hair on fire types of statements. saying things that there is some truth to what he says. I mean, he doesn't get it all wrong, but he gets most of it wrong. And the problem is this climate change boogeyman.
Right. And
so your question is exactly right on. So let's start with a couple of facts. 92% of the water is coming from the mountains of the Rocky Mountains, okay, in Utah and Wyoming, Colorado. 85% of the total runoff, the water that after the snow melts or the rain falls, it runs down to the watershed into the river. It's called runoff. 85% of that comes from 15% of the upper basin. So it's a small area that's providing all of the water, or 92% of the water for the Colorado River. And that's astounding. So, okay, so if snow is so important, this gets to the climate change question. Let me just look. So here's stream flow.
Okay, we can see it. Okay.
All right. You see the red line?
Yep.
It's pretty flat, right?
Right.
It's not going down a lot, is it?
No, well, it goes up and down and up and down. Yeah. It
goes up and down. It's slightly down over here. Right. But not that much.
Right.
Okay. And the other thing is, look at the blue lines. The red line that I pointed out earlier, that's the 10-year rolling average. The blue line is year-to-year data. So the supply of water from snowmelt is like this.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
But mostly moving sideways. Is right. it down today relative to 2000? Yes. Okay. We were at 16.5 million acre feet stream flow in 2000. Now we're below 15. Okay. But we're heading into the winter. And so, you know, the evaporation's going to stop. The demand from agriculture is pretty much done because it's all spring right. irrigation for crops. And where do you think the crops are? Southern yeah. California. So yeah. they're piping that over the Sierra Madres from the Colorado. But anyway, so snowfall is critical. So what's going on with snowfall? Let me find this other chart.
Well, and it goes back to, you know, you see all these stories about, oh, Lake Mead is, you know, and you can see cities are being uncovered. It's so dry, drier than history. There's not, you can't even put your boat in there anymore, making it seem as if it's all climate change. And it's all just it's a boogeyman, like you said.
Well, okay.
So the snowfall.
There is a crisis. I don't want to diminish that. Find my chart. Here it is. So this chart I'm going to show you shows you the water level of Lake Mead. So Lake Mead is the key one. Lake Powell is just the funnel to Lake Mead. It generates okay. electricity for the Navajo Indian Reservation, for Phoenix, for places, or you know, northern Arizona, Lake Powell I'm talking about. Then Mead, then it funnels river down to Lake Mead. So Lake Mead is really the holding tank for the southern basin for the most part. So here's the levels of Lake Mead. So okay. you can see here, that's when the dam was built. So okay. they're building the water supply. You can see it jag up and down. This is the 1950 drought. Then we come to here. Look at this right here. You see it's coming down. So right. the lake level is coming down, but right here, 1993 is when the first assessment of the Colorado River Basin and how to manage it hydrologically was done. 1993. This is one of the guys I quoted in the Colorado Politics article. He said recently, if they had implemented the plan we gave them 30 years ago, there would be a lot more water in Lake Mead right now and Lake Powell as far as that goes. But there isn't.
And why is there? And why? And is it because of climate change or because everybody's taking it out?
Yeah. So, oh my God, is it because of climate change? Well, remember, most of the water is coming from snow. Most of the water that runs down the Colorado River all the way to Gulf of Baja Gulf is snowpack. Can you see okay. that?
Uh huh.
Is it glowing down real dramatic?
No,
hasn't changed at all.
Virtually flat. In fact, if you do a rolling average again, it's slightly up over since 1938, since the data was collected.
Right.
So this thing about snowpack and, oh my God, you know, Colorado's going to lose the ski industry. Denver's going to have to ration water, even though they pipe it. You know, the Colorado headwaters are on the western side of the Continental Divide. They flow towards the Pacific.
Right.
So if we just let nature do her course, we'd be in big trouble here in Denver.
No, they pipe it. That's actually, well, and that's the thing. I mean, it's because we've only got
a why is Lake Mead down so much?
Say this.
Why is Lake Mead down so much?
So why is Lake Mead down? So this is the key question. I mean, we address climate change. One quick thing on climate change. Most people aren't aware of this. You can see the red and the blue. The red graph is the raw data from the National Oceanic and Administration Association. No. The blue is. That's the raw data. You see the ups and downs?
Uh-huh.
We go through cycles of cooling and warming. It's just natural. In 2015, NOAA decided to modify the data.
Oh.
So what they did is they created algorithms that cooled the past. You see how the red line is a lot lower than the blue line in the older days. They cooled the past and they warmed the future. Why did they do that? So that it would show a better correlation with the increase in CO2.
Well, wait a minute. So they took the data and I'm no scientist, but it seems to me that the data should show what the data shows.
Oh.
But when it doesn't show, you can't say we're just going to. Well, that's how they did it with Pfizer and the mice, I guess, or whoever it is, you know, with the vaccine. So no wonder we're all screwed up there. It's like if they're like, oh, look, all these people died. No, we're just going to change it to lived. And so.
Yeah, no, that's a good example. Julie, why did that? So if you remember back in 2009, we had this thing called Climate Gate. Do you remember?
They fudged all the
hockey stick and all that.
Well, we've only got a couple of minutes. So the bottom line, though, is so why is there less water in Lake Mead? People need water. Population growth.
Water. Let me read this to you. We have 16 million new people in the region since 1970. Where are those people mainly going? There's 5 million new people in LA, 3.8 million new people in Phoenix, of all places, the god-awful, hottest, driest place. 1.6 million new people in Las Vegas, 1.8 million new people in Denver. Okay, the major cities have grown substantially. Of the total growth, of the total new people demand, 55.5% are LA and San Diego.
Wow.
That's why there's more demand than there is water. Why is that? Politics. Okay, think about who's going to make the money when they develop this land and the influence that they have over politicians. You know, because they know they're going to make not millions, they're going to make.
I've covered this for years, and that becomes the bottom line thing is in the end, there is, as you said, Denver and Aurora fight about it. Aurora now is actually doing something and saying, okay, we can't have everybody with their Kentucky bluegrass, right? I remember 40 years ago, my dad, when I moved out here, was like, why does everyone in Colorado have Kentucky bluegrass? He said, you got to water that in Illinois. So, I mean, and he wasn't an environmentalist, but even he could get that. And I think that's exactly what happens is you have the developers come in and you're like, okay, well, you're going to put in this subdivision with these yards and all this stuff, which I love yards. I'm not against it. And people say, well, there's not going to be enough water. They're like, well, for the next election cycle, there's going to be plenty of water. And that's exactly what happens. And then now,
so Colorado Politics did a 6-piece article talking about climate change and the lowering of Lake Mead.
The Gazette.
Oh, okay. And it was all bullshit.
No, not all of it. I mean, you know, with the with these guys, there's always a modicum of truth, right? So if they talk about data, which is not very often, they talk in this context, they're talking about lake levels at Lake Mead. Well, they're right. What they're saying is the fact. Lake Mead levels are at a crisis level. And, you know, if we'd only listened to the scientists 30 years ago.
Well, right. What would they have done?
Well, here, wait, let me, this is funny. Leo says the real problem is the low water flush toilets that you actually have to flush 3 to 5 times to make them work.
That's true.
I'll tell you what, you know, Leo's got one solution right there. It's that kind of stuff. I mean, the what you said, lawns, the things like that. I mean, Las Vegas should not even exist.
Right. And so listen,
how is it that they keep building hotels and running water through all of these hotels? Yes, they do recycle that water and they do a great job.
So, but still, there's only so much. Listen, we got to go. But before we go, you know, we've had Roy on before to talk about, he's got 2 great books out. Mm-hmm. Why don't you tell people where they can get your books too and the columns at Colorado Politics?
Yeah, Amazon.com, the books are there. The first book talks about, gives the history of the election. So your earlier segment, if they want to read that book, they can draw. I don't draw the conclusion for them, but it's, you know, pretty obvious. Then the second book is called We All Fall Down, The Dissolution of America. And it's the first 100 days and then extended, updated to the first 16 months of the Biden administration and the nightmare that he's created.
Yeah.
All right.
Hey, Roy, thanks so much. We appreciate it. And
keep
for the next
truth.
One.
Hey, Chuck, this is a superpower elixir.
Yeah.
It gives you a lot of energy. Just, you know, sometime I'll give you the recipe.
Okay. Okay. What's its alcohol level?
It's infused, but I don't know.
All right.
All right. Thanks so much. Take care.
Thank you to Roy. Thank you to John Lott Jr. Thank you to everybody on Zoom. Hey, remember, as always, you can get all of the shows at chuckandjulie.com. You can subscribe to us there. Thank you to the great guys at BBS. That's it for
another day, another dollar.
Another day, another dollar. We'll see you all on Wacky Wednesday. Everybody have a great couple of days. Bye, Roy. Mm-hmm.